All right, yeah, that brings us to 14 minutes past 3 o'clock. It's the afternoon drive here on radio today. And it is my pleasure to introduce a very warm welcome in studio to my guest for the next little while, Malcolm Gooding. Malcolm, good afternoon.
Greetings, Errol. Lovely to be on your program.
Thank you. I'm glad you made the time. I have so much I want to talk to you about.
So much I can tell you.
All right. Now, listeners, this voice you know, one of the most famous voices on South African radio, and has been for, gosh, it goes back to the 60s, Malcolm.
I started in radio on the 1st of October 1967, working for the English Radio Service of the SABC. And I've been involved in broadcasting ever since. So we're talking about 47-odd years.
Right. Now, I want to play this clip for the listeners because this is one of the most instantly recognizable bits of South African radio from way back when. Take a listen to this.
You have been listening to the last program in the series, Squad Cars. The final program of Squad Cars was dramatized by Anthony Frijon, narrated by Malcolm Gooding, directed by Colin Fish, and produced by David Gooden.
Chevrolet brings back the good times.
Okay, so that is some memories there from Malcolm Gooding, the last broadcast of Squad Cars.
Now, in the middle of 1985.
Right, so now, you must have voiced, what, 800 more of those?
According to our records, it's 823, but according according to Tony Frijon, who wrote a considerable number of the episodes, he says it was probably in the 850s.
Gosh.
So who's going to argue over 20-odd episodes when you're spreading it over hundreds?
Mm.
So it spanned from 68 to 85. So that's, what's that, 17 years?
Mm. What I remember about listening to you way back, was it in the 80s, was Going Gooding.
Going Gooding was on the air.
Tell us the history of that.
That was from 1968. Till 1974,
the 70s.
And then it was brought back to life in the late 70s.
Mm.
And it's an interesting study in listening habits, because you must remember, up until 1974, up until 1976, Errol, South Africa depended on radio and radio only for entertainment.
Mm.
But from 76, 77, we obviously had the advent of television.
Mm.
And because Going Gooding was a popular program in the radio days, there was a belief by the head of the English service at that stage was a man called Ronnie Wilson. And he thought, let's bring it back.
Yeah.
And we brought it back somewhere towards the end of the 70s. It was an interesting experiment. It worked quite well, but the listenership habits had changed considerably. People were watching television. It's as simple as that.
Mm.
And radio, as you know, radio has a niche listenership, and it also has opportunity listenership when you're driving in your motor car. I often wonder how much dedicated listenership there is compared to the way there was before the advent of television.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, there is dedicated listenership. In other words, when people are doing the ironing or listening to their serials on a Wednesday afternoon or whatever.
Yeah.
That's dedicated listenership. But you can multitask with radio.
Yeah.
Can you really multitask with television?
No, you can't because you have to watch. Some people can sit and knit or do whatever or write but I'm not one of those people who can. I need 100% focus, otherwise I don't know what I'm doing.
And you know the old song about TV killing radio and
kill the radio.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about the voice. Now, your voice has a particular instantly recognizable timbre. Don't you love that word?
Lovely word, yes. It's got a good ring to it,
too. Did you, back in the day when you were a teenager, did you become aware that you had a different voice to the peers in your classroom? Did you go for voice coaching? I know John Burke spoke a lot about that. About
you know, I grew up in a very rough town. I grew up firstly in Vereeniging, and then at the age of 13, I moved to Germiston.
Young.
Now you're not going to get rougher places, my China. I mean, this is how it is, eh? So I had a double life. I had my life with my mates,
yeah,
and then I had the way I spoke at home because Rachel Gooding. Rachel Edna Evans, my mother, was my tutor, and she wouldn't tolerate. She wouldn't tolerate. She came from Wales, learnt English, mastered it, and it became a treasured aspect to her life, this correct English.
Grammar, diction, all of the
above.
Yes.
And she was well-educated and she's still alive, actually. She's well-educated, inculcated this spirit of proper pronunciation and very keen about that sort of thing. So I was very fortunate. I was able to stay with my mates and play with them and jaw with them and all the rest of it. But then when the time came home, how's it, Ma? You know, I'm home.
Now, back in the day at SABC, you were taken under the wing of who was then head of SABC. You were talking about
Tony Faulkner. Tony Faulkner had just been appointed head of English service, English radio service. His predecessor was a man called Henry Hull. And these are two great old broadcasters. They had been...
We have a photograph of him on the wall
of Henry. Yes. No, he's one of the great doyens, I suppose. Well, great doyens, it's like a repetition of the same term, tautology. Henry Hull and then Tony Faulkner, and they set such standards. But the whole model was tune into BBC Four today, and nothing's changed. And that's exactly how it worked.
It was very formal, though, wasn't
it? Terribly formal.
You know, you dare not step out of line. You do not say a word incorrectly because there'd be somebody in the hallowed halls of, you know, the head office who would come and jump on you.
It was invariably Tom McGee. And Tom McGee was the English language advisor. And as Colin Fish once noted, a Scottish language advisor is a bit like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. But Tom McGee was very much, you know, there's a scene in our play. My name is Thomas McGee, Allah Braveheart, and I see before me a whole radio station in defiance of bad grammar and mispronunciation. You've come to enunciate as eloquent man. An eloquent man you are. Not. Tell our enemies that they may split our infinitives, but they'll never conjugate our verbs. And so it goes. And he was wonderful. He was wonderful. And he would be listening. And he'd say, did I hear you saying Hayden? For the something in the name of Haggis, it's Hayden. And it would be that sort of precision and pickiness. And then every Thursday we'd have a meeting with Tom McGee, and he'd go through the staff and he'd say, "You've mispronounced that, and you, how could you do that? It's Sir Abubakar Tafawa Balewa, and he's the Prime Minister of Nigeria, and the sooner you know that, you know." And so it would go.
So when you listen with that kind of training now, when you listen now to radio currently, and some of the mispronunciations,
yeah.
Does it give you a bit of a chill? Do you think, we wouldn't do that in my day, you know?
Exactly. We are bombarded by adolescent idiocy, to quote a line from the play. But it is a completely different... There's a lot of dumbing down, I'm afraid to say this.
How far do accents then influence? Because, you're very good on accents. And do you not find that they play a part? I mean, a Frenchman would not necessarily pronounce an English word correctly, but it would be acceptable. Would it not, to your ear?
Sometimes the pronunciation of a word with the strength of the accent that it comes from can actually enrich it. For example, when an Afrikaner describes his culture. He must do it with a strong Afrikaans accent. Mm, mm. You know, it must be from the heart. He must talk about it from the heart. You can't have him taking the affectation of somebody like Steve de Villiers, who was so desperate to sound like an Englishman, you know, that, you know, that he just got ridiculous.
Yes.
I'm not saying he was ridiculous, but so there's nothing nicer than, and also an authentic German accent. You know. Keep the accent, because that adds the character. It adds the flavor. The French accent you mentioned a moment ago.
Yes.
You can't imagine a person getting the same excitement about the description of a food, of a dish, a menu.
Yes.
If you had a straight English accent and you had a Frenchman describing what the chef has prepared today.
Yes, of course.
Don't you agree with me?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you've mentioned the play, Now, I've seen your production, and it is really very funny. I mean,
thank you, Aaron.
You take us through the history and some of the anecdotes from way back when, and through some of the programs you've done. And it's just a wonderful remembrance, a journey down memory lane. It's the first time you've ever been on stage.
First time ever,
And what was it like? I think you opened at Rudaport Theatre.
Correct.
Where
yes,
I saw it.
Yes, in August.
Was it a daunting task for you? Did you think?
It was totally intimidating, but I had to go out of my way to remember as much as I could, which seemed to have worked out. The script was well written, and it was co-written by Angus Douglas and Tim Sandham, and then I gave a lot of input, and then they fleshed it out and constructed this thing. But it was such a new experience, and you must remember, I have this ongoing dialogue with myself.
Yes.
Where I play 26 characters.
I was going to say many, but there are 26. Wow.
26 characters, and a lot of them have been pre-recorded. For example, Tony Faulkner, my doyen at the time, my mentor at the time, He speaks to me from heaven, and I say to him, "Mr. Faulkner, what's it like up there?" And he says, "Malcolm, my dear fellow, let's not think on these things." And then he proceeds to extract conversation from me, and we have this wonderful dialogue right through. And then I also chat to Dali Dladla, and Dali Dladla is the new director general of the SABC, and he phones me because he wants to remember the good work done in the apartheid years, not just the bad work, but the good work done in the apartheid years. Yeah. So he gives me an opportunity to have this program for 1 hour. It's about that whole experience.
I fell down laughing. There were some really, really funny moments. Is that now you're still on with that? You got a regular. You were
yes.
on Foxwood. Are you we're still on Foxwood?
It sounds quite conceited, but we're actually Foxwood's signature act for the year. Which means
nice.
Yes, it's lovely.
Gosh, there's a bit of kudos.
Yeah,
huh?
It's lovely. Which means we've just finished a 3-week run now. And every second Sunday of the month, there's a special show in the late afternoon at Foxwood, going through. And then we've got a full month in August at Foxwood again. So right through, and then of course we've got the Grahamstown Festival, the Hilton Festival, and then I'm going to the Cork Bay Theatre. I'm travelling down to the Cape tomorrow.
Okay.
And I'm going to be there for a week. The Cork Bay Theatre is a beautiful old church that they've converted. It's on the waterfront.
It's one of the most beautiful parts of this country. It's just wonderful.
Isn't it lovely? Isn't it lovely? Yeah. Well, I must be honest, I've never been to the theatre, so this will be a new experience.
Yes.
But I'm travelling down there and spending a week and coming back in just over a week's time.
I have to ask you about the moment with Madiba at World Cup. And that particular time in your life in that afternoon, how big was that for you to shake him by the hand and hold the cup and introduce him? I mean, he said to you at the time something like, "Do you think I need? I can't do the voice."
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was in the booth at Ellis Park. During doing announcements, stadium announcements during the 1995 Rugby World Cup final. You can imagine the excitement. South Africa versus New Zealand. Joel Stransky has just kicked South Africa to victory.
Yep.
And we are delirious with joy. There's euphoria. There's excitement. It's just pandemonium. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I get this frantic knocking on the window of the booth, and it's Scotty Seward. Now, Scotty Seward was the television, the executive television producer of the whole production of the 1995 Rugby World Cup, and he called out to me, said, "Quickly, Malcolm, you have to get out onto the field and introduce the president for the trophy presentation." And I said to him, "Scotty, why are you asking me now? It would have been fair to have given me some time to prepare something." Apparently, that was one aspect of the entire production that they hadn't planned for, was the actual presentation of the trophy. Okay. Nevertheless, I wasn't there to argue. Yeah. So I dashed out of the booth, ran onto the field and onto the stage. President Mandela was embracing his players. "My boys, my boys, my boys." I called across to him. I said, "President Mandela, sir, the world is waiting for the trophy presentation." He said, "So you want me to present the William Webb Ellis Trophy?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Who are you and what is your job?" I said to him, "Sir, I'm here to introduce you." He said, "Oh, so you think I need to be introduced?"
that's the line, yes.
Isn't that beautiful? What a sense of humor.
Yeah. What a moment for you, though. Hey, wow.
Man.
If you just joined us, by the way, we're talking to, we're talking to Malcolm Gooding, talking about that big day, Saturday afternoon back in 1995, special day. I bet that sits with you for a long, long time.
I'll remember that forever.
Yeah. Okay, now just moving away from theatre and radio and all those things, you do a lot of other things. You have restored houses.
Yes. Well,
what is it? A passion of yours? Do you buy the house, or what do you do?
I must be crazy.
But what do you do?
I've just recently finished a project. I bought a farm years and years ago in the Bonnievale area.
Mm, oh, right.
And it was a rundown old house, and I had this dream. I don't know if you've heard of a famous South African architect by the name of Harvey Fagan. Now, Harvey Fagan was responsible for the restoration, the complete restoration of Tilbach after it had been destroyed in the earthquake in the late 60s. He was given carte blanche to fix the place up. Mm. And he had a particular penchant for Cape Georgian architecture. Mm. And I wanted to restore this old house in Cape Georgian style. And it took me the best part of 2.5-3 years. But we've got this on this little farm in Bonnievale. It is so beautiful. That's one of them. And we also have a guest house, which the Georgian house is like a satellite of our bigger guest house in Franschhoek. And that's where we have our olive farm. And I also built that house, and it was one of those things that took something like 12 years to do, you know.
But you love it. I mean, do you go and research it? Is it out of your head? How do you do it?
I think that I'm a man more of form than function. Mm. So I like something pretty, and I'll be obsessed with the way it looks and the way it should appear, and it should appeal to the eye. I might in the process overlook the functionality of the house. Mm. I might be guilty of that, but that's besides the point. I've done quite a lot of that sort of work over the years.
And furnishing, do you travel the country, or do you buy overseas, both of the above?
Very much so. Junk shops in the Clay and Karoo. That's an experience to go into these places in Robertson, in Karlitsdorp, in Oudtshoorn, in Prince Albert. Just to see these things, these dust-covered items, and to see the potential in them.
Yes.
Victorian pieces.
Do you buy them and sell them, or do you just restore them?
No, purely for the purposes of our guest house.
Yes.
And we place this furniture, once I've restored it, we place it in positions of importance.
Yes. Yeah. Now at the guest house, which adjoins the farm, am I right?
Yes.
It's olives.
The
we you talk about is you and your wife.
Salome and I. Salome. Yes. 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 Yes.
Now were you always involved in sort of agriculture type things, or was it something that you just kind of had a moment that you thought, this is what I'd love to do?
I'm an appalling farmer.
But the internet's very useful.
I just had this dream of olives.
Yes.
But olives come with so many surprises. Well, maybe it's those years in Provence, the Peter Males, the influences of that sort of thing.
Okay.
You know, olives have such a good ring to them. You know, the olive tree is beautiful. An olive grove is lovely to look at. And then the romance of harvesting your own olives and processing your own olive oil and that sort of thing. And that's what we do. But olives have a great ring. And then, of course, we are able now to supply restaurants with oil and with olives. And that's quite rewarding in its own right.
Are the restaurants countrywide, or are you particularly in Western Cape?
We supply some in the Cape, mm. and then some up here in Johannesburg, but not big numbers because we're essentially small producers. To be a proper olive producer, you've got to be prepared for bulk, for volumes.
And the guest house, how many rooms do you have?
It's the most beautiful place, if I may say so. We have it's a 13-roomed guest house. That's made up of the manor house, which has 8 rooms. Then we have the converted barn, which is a delightful old structure that has 3 suites. And then we have the old villa down at the bottom. And they're all in olive groves, so to speak. And the setting is spectacular. We're on the R45, just outside Franschhoek. You travel past La Motte, you're across the road from La Provence, and you're 3 kilometers from the village, and there you'll see Gooding's Groves. It's a wonderful place.
How often do you get there?
I'm going there tomorrow, coincidentally, and I go there probably about a week a month.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It should be more. Yeah. But most of my work is still up in Joburg.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, you're still voicing a lot. You're voicing for National Geographic. You're voicing for Discovery Channel, I think, as well.
That sort of thing, yes.
And it'll just keep going.
I'm going to tell you now, I'm voicing for the new Oscar Pistorius channel.
Yong?
I'm telling you. I'm going from here They're preparing something in the order of 50 programs. You know, it falls under the umbrella of Carte Blanche.
Yes.
It's a dedicated channel, 199, on the DSTV umbrella bouquet. Mm. And they've got something in the order of... It's going to be South Africa's O.J. Simpson, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And
if you're a voyeur, this is for you, you know.
Well, even if you're not, hey, because, I mean, they couldn't write a soapy that would be as good as this. And it's just, you know, the fall from grace, good-looking boy, you know, the whole story.
No, it's so sad.
But international as well, it's going to be a lot of interest worldwide.
You know, I've just come back from spending Christmas with my daughter in Tunbridge Wells in Kent, and then I crossed to Atlanta where my son lives, and they have family. Mm. And it's amazing, in both countries... If you say South Africa, there are 2 replies, Mandela and Pistorius.
And Pistorius.
It's amazing. Well, they don't say Pistorius, they say Oscar.
Malcolm, it's been lovely talking to you.
Oh, Errol, it's wonderful chatting to you.
Thank you so much. I mean, I just so appreciate the fact that you've
for giving me this opportunity to indulge myself.
Brilliant. One and only Malcolm Gooding. Thank you.